You're tuned to The Trail Show.
Get on the trail!
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Arriba, 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 tata!
It's The Trail Show.
Bam! Ah!
Featuring Lawton Disco Grinter.
Never slap a man who's chewing tobacco.
Felicia P.O.D. Hermosillo.
I'm against historical trash.
Mike D'Lo DiLorenzo.
Embrace the brutality.
Daniel Out of Order Alvarez.
What's up, Trail Show?
And now broadcasting live from Boulder, Colorado, it's The Trail Show.
Coming to you live from the Bobby Stanton Studio in various historic Colorado, Vermont, South Carolina, and Yucca Valley beer districts. This is The Trail Show. The Trail Show is the longest-running monthly hiking podcast on the planet. We are on the air and everywhere and heard worldwide on all your favorite apps and at thetrailshow.com. Did you know you can subscribe for free to The Trail Show mailing list at thetrailshow.com? Did
free.
You know this? It's free.
Free.
It's free.
Free.
Get into it. All right, folks. It's the Ides of March. We're still all hungover from our Valentine's Day candy massacre, but we're here. We have important things to talk about. POD, what's on the menu tonight?
Well, we have some exciting trips to talk about. I know that. Let's see, what else? I think we have some mailbag. I'm not sure about calls, but I'm sure El Hikador called to update us about his travel itineraries as well as various
sports scores.
So
I can't confirm.
There's a couple of interesting trail news items, and we have, of course, our donors and our Ask a Hiker questions.
In the millions. Let's not bury the lead, POD. I'm going to tell the folks about my worst night in the woods in 20,000 miles of hiking, which happened a week ago tonight.
I said we had some trails.
Yeah, but you made it sound very fluffy and nice, and it was anything but.
I was there too, okay?
Oh, I know.
Was that part of the reason it was the worst night?
Well, no, we've had lots of nights together that were not great where we were not speaking to each other. This was other level.
This was different situation.
Yeah,
different. All right, we're calling an audible here. We normally start with trail news. Tonight, we're not starting with trail news. We're starting with Garrett the Onion Christensen. He's back for more torture, ladies and gentlemen. Onion, are you there?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey.
Onion.
Very cool. We
Onion's
guesting with the Cebolla. He's guesting with us tonight.
Onion. Sorry.
Look at Disco second. With the Spanish.
What? I know how to say onion. You know.
Yeah. Okay.
Trail of the month. Not necessarily a trail, but all the trails in Joshua Tree National Park. Do I have that right?
Yes, all the maintained trails.
Oh, okay. So let's get into that. So you're currently living part of the year just outside Joshua Tree, and how quickly did you move there and decide, oh, there's X number mile of trails in this park, and I must walk every inch of them?
It was probably within a week.
How many miles are out there?
There's about 200 there that I can count. So like if anybody does this, you got to decide on what source you're using. The park service has a website and it says 300, but I cannot find 300. So I found 200 and so ultimately my source is the Nat Geo Trails Illustrated paper map. If you want me to explain the general idea, it's sort of complete hiking a park. And like I think one of you guys, maybe it was Out of Order, mentioned like a local park that he was doing nearby that he was slowly just like trying to knock down.
It's an interesting way to see a place. But yeah. Of course, it was like 26 miles, not 200.
But I sort of had this idea, like On the PCT, when you hike through Yosemite, it's like you did not necessarily see the best part. You certainly didn't see all the park. You might not have even seen the best part. And then in Yellowstone, if you're on the official CDT, you just cut across the southwest corner of the park. You're only in the park for like 30 miles on the official trail. So I had this idea, like, what if I just spent an entire summer in the park, like hiking every mile of trail in the park? I haven't done that, but I was just sort of dreaming about it. And there's this runner, Ricky Gates, who after running across the country, he then like did something more local with, that he called Every Street. And so like, if you Google the hashtag Every Street, you can see maps that he made because he ran every street in San Francisco.
Whoa.
And so it's like, it's San Francisco is 7x7. So it's like 50 square miles. And it's, I think it's like 1300 miles of total road.
Wow. And it's hilly.
Yes. Yes.
Well, I bet he saw like some stuff.
This was maybe a few years ago. Like there was hopefully fewer tents and people living in them on the streets. But so I did, a few other people have done this in like in cities. And I just thought, yeah, we moved. My partner got a job at a local land conservation organization here. So we moved here in 2021. And right away I said, oh yeah, there's not all that many. I'm gonna eventually do every mile of trail in the park.
Wow.
And so I finished this Thanksgiving-ish. I wrote a little blog post about it. When did I finish? I finished.
How long did it take total, like from when you started the thing to when you finished?
I just did it slowly, bit by bit.
Yeah,
over 2.5 years.
Oh, so you section hiked these trails?
Yes, I this is definitely section hiking.
Okay, because I thought we were talking about a through hike of all of the trails in Joshua Tree National Park.
You could do it that way. I've sort of thought about how one could go about doing it. Like,
sounds like there would be a lot of backtracking involved, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So this is like there's this whole area of math, of graph theory in mathematics known as the Postman problem. So like, what's the minimum number of miles you could do to hit everything? And I did no such thing. I definitely did not optimize this. It was just slowly keeping track of every mile that I had covered. And so I don't know, like, I'd just guess that I like did twice that much mileage in order to hit. So
right.
Like, it's probably about 200 miles. I'm just guessing I did.
So it probably sounds like there were no food caches involved.
there was not even a single overnight.
There were snacks back at the car. That was the food cache.
Yes, snacks back at the car. There were actually a few water caches just for the one longest day. So there is the longest single named trail in the park is 37 miles. That's the California Riding and Hiking Trail.
We've done that one.
Yeah.
You know, funny.
PUD and I did it as an overnight.
Yeah, we did that. And we actually cached water. And it was so cold that we dumped the water out. and beer. And I didn't, we cached a couple of beers each and I didn't have any of mine. Disco had all of them. I couldn't believe it. It was so cold. Was like, no way I'm drinking a beer right now. Anyway,
what month proceed. Were you doing it in?
It was right after the very last kickoff. So it would have been late April of 15, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Can't remember what the last year of the formal kickoff was, but somewhere, maybe 14. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm here now in Yucca Valley, which is right next to Joshua Tree now, and it's pretty cold.
Is it?
But April or May would be ideal. Typically, so yeah, April, I'm surprised that it got super cold.
It was cold.
What's it like out there in July, August, Onion?
I still go running. I still do trails in the park, but really only at sunset at the very earliest. Like the sun has to be seriously on its way down and cooling off. And I carry a ton of water and I'm used to it. But
wow.
Yeah, people sort of come here. I don't know. I don't know if statistically it actually happens more, but it kind of seems like people come here and die a lot.
The park,
or they?
Jesus,
that's a real selling point.
Statistically,
for the
people come
Joshua
here and
tree.
Die. This is where people come to die.
Oh boy!
Influencers come.
I mean, yeah, it makes total sense. It's like a picture of
have influencers
beautiful
passed
place,
away
close to population centers, super hot and unbearable, and like
yeah, and have influencers passed away in Joshua Tree National Park trying to influence things.
Not that I know.
So what
was your most memorable hike of the bunch?
The California Riding and Hiking Trail. The first set, like one of the shortest trails, one of the like the most heavily trod tourist attractions is the Barker Dam Loop. So this is like a trail that's, I think the whole loop is 1.3 miles or something. And
okay.
It goes by an old cattle stock tank where it's like the rocks get really close to build to making a natural dam. And 100 years ago, some cowboy filled it in with concrete. So there's a putt. But anyway, the point is, I was there at sunset. The first time I ever hiked this, my partner and I went there at sunset and there were 8 or 9 bighorn sheep just waiting for all the humans to go away.
Did they seem unusually large or did they seem regularly sized? Just curious.
No, they were
just regular. Okay.
Okay.
It's going to tie into my news segment later.
Okay.
Onion, there's an area of the park called the Hall of Horrors. Can you give us some details on that place?
That is, I don't know that that has maintained trail miles. So I've passed by that, but I feel like that's just a climbing area, like a pile of rock, like a bouldering area.
So did you climb all of the routes as well?
No, I'm the one, I'm the weirdo who lives here and like runs all year round and barely climbs.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that'd be the same. Yeah. Huh. Different strokes for different folks, right?
Yeah, it is a great climbing area, but all the people, all friends tell me like it's a terrible place to learn. Like it's really rough. It's really rough sandstone. So
lots of scrapes.
Yeah, your fingers.
Exfoliation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you been to the Lost Palms Oasis?
Yes, and that is on my list of other top hikes. The Lost Palms Oasis. There's a few natural oases in the park, and that's probably my favorite. So that's the only maintained trail.
What is it? What is it like? What is that? What's okay. there?
So
explain the oasis.
It's a canyon area, basically, and it gets narrow enough that it gets little enough sunlight. And collects enough water that there is typically at least a puddle, and on rare occasions, running
cold
water.
Beers in the puddle. Oh, okay, running water. Okay.
Cold
so this
beer.
Is on the south side of the park, that's closer to Palm Springs. Basically, the park is up near me. Morongo Basin is the northern most popular entrance to the park. That's higher elevation, like 4,600 or so. And then if you go through the park to the south, that's dropping down to the Coachella Valley, and that's much lower in elevation. So it's much hotter. And so it's kind of cool to go through the park and see the change in the ecology, because there's no more Joshua trees down south, but there's ocotillos.
Mm-hmm.
And in these oases, you get palm trees.
Look at that,
a puddle of water.
Yeah, and I just put a photo of the Lost Palms Oasis in the chat.
Looks pretty cool. Looks like some fun little rocks to climb on too.
That is a tiny little oasis, if you will. But you could probably get some shade in there, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Can you actually like walk into those tree, into those?
Yes. Some of them. So Lost Palms. Yeah. There's one on, there's an oasis on the north side called 49 Palms that they, that they shut most of the year, or, you know, they shut during the warm months because the water is for
the animals.
So even if you do find this water, you are not allowed to drink any of it. So all the water, all the natural water sources in the park are for animals only.
Okay.
And, yeah. So 40 at the 49 Palms Oasis, you're like not supposed to actually go in the palm trees. They have them roped off, but at others of them, it's big enough that like, yeah, you can walk through the middle of it.
How far is it to get to that? The one that you went to,
the Lost Palms, the biggest Lost Palms, that's about 7 miles each way, I believe.
Okay. No, that probably keeps a significant amount of people out. Mm-hmm. 7 miles each way, 14 miles round trip. That's a lot for a lot of people.
Most, yeah.
What about that far, the far northeastern kind of quarter of the park? It looks like there's not much in the way of access at all. Are there any trails that go back in there?
Not that I know of. So the trails are mostly in the northwest corner of the park.
Mm-hmm.
And there's two major entrances that sort of the tourists go in. There's one in 29 Palms and there's one in Joshua Tree. And people sort of drive a big U shape, go in one and out the other.
Okay.
And then the park is massive. So it's smaller than Death Valley. Everything's smaller than Death Valley, but it is most of the east of the park is trailless, and it has far fewer of the Joshua trees. It doesn't have the rock formations that people know. So the trails, you know, the vast majority of the maintained trails and the campgrounds and everything like that are in this northwest corner. I've been over to the east a few times, but I haven't done an east-west traverse or anything. There's a mountain range called the Coxcombs over there on the east side, and I've bagged a few peaks over there, but that's about it.
So it is possible to do some cross-country?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Now that I've done the maintained trails, like the cross country is far more appealing.
Okay.
That's even in the few months since completing the maintained trails, I've done several, just basically you can pick a canyon, if you have enough skill, and I feel like I do, going cross country, the canyons are not super technical, less difficult than the Sierra High Route. There's if you go when it's hot, there could be just as bad repercussions from a fall. But just picking random canyons to go down is my new thing. So starting on the Palm Springs side and sort of picking a canyon and coming up from Palm Springs, you can go. And these canyons are like, sometimes you might just call it a wash and it becomes a canyon, or a wash or an arroyo or something. They're not super deep, but it is nice travel.
So what prompted you to hike all the maintained trails? Like, how did it start? You live there, you're hiking, and then you got this wild hair to hike them all? Like, what happened?
I was reading that runner who did it in San Francisco, his explanation for why he was doing it. And it's just I was running a lot of these. I would hike, you know, I would hike a bunch of them too, but it was just, and instead of running the same loop you've already done before around the neighborhood, let's just go see something that we haven't seen.
So did you keep track of them on the map? Did you like redline the trails that you ran or hiked? Did you
Strava
time?
Yes.
Use Strava. So Strava had all the trails, and using Strava, you were able to see which trails you had been on.
Well, the combination of the combination of the Trails Illustrated paper map and Strava afterwards, because the trail the park has very little cell reception, so you can't really. It's very hard to check on anything using Strava when you're in the park. But before going, I would look at my personal Strava heat map and then the global Strava heat map. So there's the trails that I have done, and then there's the trails that basically anyone who uses Strava has run or hiked. So I basically was looking and would say, I'm going to go to this area and I haven't done this segment, so I'll go do this segment. And
were there any like segments that you missed, like real short segments that you were like,
yes,
I got to go all the way back there for that four tenths of a mile or whatever.
Yes. There's, I mean, it's dumb little out and backs that you're like, oh God, do I really need to connect this to this? And like, there may even still be one of those.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
So I say, I believe I've covered every maintained mile of trail, because you know there's got to be like
those tenths add up, Onion. Those, you know,
a trail segment, a trail segment that in it, the whole thing, the whole nature trail is like a quarter of a mile. That's not. I've done the vast majority of those, like been stopped at every single pullout, but there's probably something I've missed.
Did you ever have to like step aside off the trail as you were, you know, consulting Strava because somebody else was coming down the trail at a high speed yelling Strava time and they were going for like an FKT of some sorts and you were like, whoa, Strava time, Strava time, and you had to step out of their way? Did that ever happen to you by chance?
No, but
only in Boulder, D-Lo.
No, it's happened to me. It's happened to me.
Yeah, in Boulder.
Boulder.
No, it was actually up in the mountains outside of Boulder, but on cross country skis, but it's happened.
Boulder adjacent. Yeah.
Boulder adjacent.
Yeah.
I wish that I have to make, when we moved here, it was the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I was trying to make friends in a new area. So I would like Strava stalk people and I would make a segment out of every single thing that I ran to try and see, oh, who else actually runs around here? Because I didn't ever see anybody out there. And it's not all that effective. So I've probably made a bunch of the Strava segments that are in the park, but it's not as popular here as in Boulder.
Got it.
Onion, would you consider yourself a Strava pro user?
I mean, I definitely pay for the premium membership. Yeah.
Oh, there is a paid tier membership. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Outside of bighorn sheep, what other wildlife did you see whilst hiking all the trails in the park?
Lots of coyote, a few deer, some. Oh, I did see one desert tortoise.
Ooh.
And actually in the park, and I saw a chuckawalla. Chuckawalla, is a lizard. It's okay. It's a pretty big lizard. This was this was a juvenile, but and rattlesnakes. Yeah.
Oh yeah. How close were you to the snakes that you?
I was, you know, bouldering, put my hand up, lifting myself up, you know, 2 feet from it.
like a movie.
And it was in Rattlesnake Canyon, no less.
Now, apropos. So,
yes.
Now, this Chuck E. Cheese lizard, when you say it's big, what do you mean? How big are we talking?
Okay. Well, like I would say that the body without the tail at full size would be, I'm guessing that's 8 to 10 inches, 8 to 10 inches.
Okay.
And then double that for tail.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. How many influencer photo shoots did you run across?
Instagram photo shoots, at least a dozen of those.
Seriously?
Oh yeah. Okay. We're so close to LA. Yeah. It's people yeah. come it's we're LA weekenders. Lots of people bringing their dogs into the park when they're not supposed to.
Oh God.
And then me saying that you're not supposed to do that, and them saying that they are
service dogs.
Service dogs. Oh, and I'm God. Like, I think you mean emotional support, and that's a
different
often perhaps baloney. And even if it's true, even if it's true, they're still not supposed to be off leash.
So. Did you consider carrying just packs of bologna and just whipping pieces of bologna?
That'd be a funny thing. Like, right? When someone's giving you some bullshit story, you like pull out some bologna.
Yeah.
Here you go.
but then, like, the bologna would just be kind of left in the desert to bake in the sun. Right? I mean, although I bet
but it would be fun to like
lizards would eat it. You know,
it'd be fun to full on sling a piece of bologna at an influencer, like slow mo. It's like hitting their face. Wet, room temperature bologna.
Bad bologna. Perhaps.
Bad bologna.
Gosh, if you wanted to keep your bologna at room temperature out in Joshua Tree, you'd probably have to bring a cooler of some sorts.
You probably need some ice.
Yeah.
Oh, P.O.D.
Oh, you went there. Oh,
we're
went
not
there.
Supposed to talk about that.
But you wouldn't want to do that. Just like if you went
to
a water source.
I think the interview was about to come to an end now.
If you went to a water source in Joshua Tree, they're like, hey, think about it. It takes a long time for this water to collect for the animals that use it. So maybe don't drink it.
Well,
maybe
let's use it to keep our bologna cool. No, we could use the water to keep our bologna cool because we're not going to drink it, right? Like,
true.
And the bologna flavor in the water would probably attract more animals to the spring. They'd be like, oh, I smell bologna.
You could just hang out in that palm spring, that palms, whatever.
Lost Palms Oasis.
Lost Palms Oasis. Yes. Slide some slices of bologna in the water, and as people approach, be like, off limits, and start whipping.
No, actually, bologna. I think what you should do is slide bologna into the off limits water and then stage a camera to film the wildlife that comes to check out the bologna.
This is all illegal. Everything you're describing, D'Lo, is the National Park Service would have a field day.
They don't
day.
Have a rule about putting bologna in water sources.
They just say don't drink it. We're not going
to
drink it.
Don't drink it. We're not drinking it. We're just putting bologna in there.
We're adding sodium to help hydrate.
No respect, these guys.
Hydrate the animals.
Oscar Mayer Springs.
Oh, boy.
Can I just say something more about this idea of complete hiking a park or hiking?
Oh, I thought you were going to say bologna.
Please do,
Yeah, I don't know if anyone has done this before. Google, I don't know. Google doesn't work anymore, right? Unless it just, all it does is link to Reddit these days. And so I haven't been able to find anyone who's done this for a national park before. If someone has, I would love to hear about it. And I think, go ahead.
So this has been done in the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. As a matter of fact, it's become an FKT and the entire trail system is over 900 miles. I don't know what the current FKT is for GSMNP, but a Trail Show listener had contacted us way back in 2022 about this. And it's funny, I never mentioned it on the show, but you bringing it up right now, I found the email, and apparently a guy named Benny Braden, at least in 22, was the FKT holder for the entire 900-mile trail system there.
Wow. Hmm.
Might be the only other park, though, that someone is – I mean, how many hundreds of miles are in, like, Yosemite?
It's 700 or something like that.
Oh, I'm shocked. I'm shocked it's not more than Great Smoky Mountain National Park.
Let's see. Okay, Yosemite's, according to their website, Yosemite says they have more than 750, and Yellowstone says they have more than 900.
Wow. Yeah, I wonder if anyone's done either of those two. I could see Yosemite for sure.
Don't be surprised after tonight's Trail Show episode if someone does it.
There's an influx
in hiking all of the maintained trails in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, Yosemite National Park,
Yellowstone
National Park. Don't be surprised. It's the trail show bump.
I did it as a section hike, but I think because it's an FKT, you could clearly do this as a continuous hike. I think doing it without a car and would be unnecessarily arbitrary, you know, a little bit painful. But with the car, yeah, you could do it. I think, you know, it would be a pretty cool way to spend a month. Mm-hmm. In April or October, November, or something like that, in Joshua Tree, knocking out every single mile of trail. In Joshua Tree, like we've been joking about, there is no water. There's not even man-made sources of water,
like water fountains and stuff.
There's
like that.
Water fountains. Okay. Those are only at the very edge of the park. So there's campgrounds that are at the edge and sort of are dead ends into the park. They aren't on roads that go through the park. They're just sort of set at the edge that you access from one point. And those have water, but the internal campsites in some of the best climbing areas of the park, Hidden Valley, Jumbo Rocks, those have no water. So people have to bring it in. So if you were doing this in one go, you would probably want to have a car so you could drive in and out and get water and just camp in four or five spots and do the hikes all in those locations.
What's the most water you left trailhead with during this whole 2.5 years of hiking?
Probably 4 liters.
Okay.
The California Riding and Hiking Trail crosses, goes east-west through sort of the more popular part of the park. So there's a couple road crossings. So
sure.
If you're doing that as a very long day hike or an overnighter, I don't think you have to carry all that much because if you're moving fast, it's 37 miles.
Yeah. Or you can just wait and go when it's rainy.
But for a woman, you'd probably have to.
Very rare occasion when it's rainy and cold, like we did. And then you need a leader and you're good. Cool. Anything else about hiking all of Joshua Tree National Park you want to mention that we didn't ask?
No, it was a fun way to explore every bit of a park. I do think it's obviously somewhat arbitrary. So is going border to border or whatever long distance hike. But doing every mile is probably more so. And so, yeah, it was, I had the time and I did it over a long, you know, over a few years. So it was fun to do in that respect. But it definitely sort of getting out there off trail is actually probably more interesting once you have become, once you've become more familiar with the park. That's all I want
to
do.
You know, maybe it would be cool. Canyons. To try to do, how many miles did you do altogether? Like 250 or something?
I think it's 200 miles a trail, probably 400.
Something like that. Okay. What would be interesting is to try to hike 200 miles in Joshua Tree all off trail.
Oh boy.
You know?
Yeah.
Another challenge.
Yeah. There's people who have done the longest east to west stretch across the park. Which
why didn't we get that person on the phone?
It would be more interesting. It's very
how long is that, Onion? Do you
that,
know?
I believe is 98 miles.
Somewhere. Wow.
But no water. Does it cross any roads?
I think he went to the main park road. Yeah, you at least once you cross the main park road.
So you could cache some water somewhere.
That seems less that seems actually more arbitrary.
Yeah,
why
totally.
I haven't done something like that is because the rangers and the people who build the trails, there's some reason they put the trails where they put them, because there's something good to see or there's old historical trash, you know, at least. And so the trails are in nice places, whereas east to west is sort of just
random
land they acquired. And that's
Onion, we have to issue you a formal trail show apology. We were going to have you on the show last month, but unfortunately, we had to bump you for the person that walked 6,800 miles. We're so sorry. I hope you understand.
I listened. It was good. She's a better storyteller than I am. That's for sure.
Oh boy.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Yep. But you're a good sport. You came on this month and we really appreciate it.
What's next? What's next after you've hiked all the trails in Joshua Tree National Park?
I am going to the Brooks Range in June.
Ooh. Okay.
Ooh.
So wow. Nano and I, the only hiking buddy who has hiked with me and then did not immediately say, no, thank you, I'm done.
Maybe time for some introspection.
Yeah, we're going to the Brooks Range for 2 weeks in the second half of June. So I'm planning that out right now.
That's a different animal.
Enjoy the mosquitoes.
Yes. All right. I won't keep you guys any longer.
Cool. Have fun. Thanks again.
Thank you. Right.
Thanks, Onion.
We're not going anywhere. Yeah, we're here.
We're here till tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Yeah, look at POD. She's already lounging.
I'm stretching. My hip's killing me.
All right, folks, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll actually do trail news and all the other stuff.
I never, ever listened to that stupid trail show, and I would never, ever, ever recommend an episode to that Buffalo Jack Wagon, my hiking partner, Slack.
All right, folks, we're back. Let's talk about our Mike DiLorenzo Beer of the Month. D-Lo, what are you drinking?
So I am drinking a beer that has very little text on the label tonight.
Oh.
This is a problem. I'm actually kind of a little bit upset about this right now, because there is not that much for me to read. So I am drinking a beer from the Upper Pass Beer Company, which is made in Vermont. It's called the Waima Waves, and it's an Imperial Pale Ale coming in the 16-ounce vessel with 61 IBUs at 8.2% alcohol by volume. And it is actually kind of a crisp, slightly malty Imperial IPA. There is no haze. There is no New England in this Imperial IPA named after someplace in Hawaii. And it is actually quite refreshing.
Hmm.
Yep.
8.2. That's punchy.
It is.
Wow.
It's good beer. Upper Pass is a nice brewing company. They don't actually brew their beer on premises. It's actually brewed up in Burlington, Vermont, by Zero Gravity Brewing Company, which is a much larger brewery. So it's kind of like a contract brewery. But they do have a tasting room in the town where my wife works, and I've never been there.
I hold in my hand So Dank IPA from Lost Cabin Brewing Company out of Rapid City, South Dakota. This beer, care of Guy Smiley. This is the only good thing I brought back from South Dakota, which we'll talk about more during the trip section. But So Dank is, and there's not much to read, D-Lo, on this label either. However, the website says So Dank is our West Coast style flagship IPA. Mosaic and Hallertau Blanc join forces to show you the piney, resinous, and dank side of an old school IPA. 6.8% ABV and 60 IBUs, I believe. And it is dank.
This is so dank.
So dank.
Is Sodank the name of a town in South Dakota?
No.
Not that I know of, but no. It's the name of Lost Cabin's flagship West Coast IPA.
Oh, you mean it's like so dank. It's not mm-hmm. Sodank. I thought when you said Sodank, it was named after some sort of North Dakota state animal or something.
No. But it'll make you feel like an animal if you have more than a couple of these, because they go down very easy and they can sneak up on you very quickly.
And they are
so dank.
I am drinking some electrolytes. Still trying to recover from my South Dakota trip.
Yep. That's what I've been drinking up until that cracked beer.
Oh, I'm not drinking anything, but I'm excited to hear about this, this adventure.
That's one way to put it.
Yeah.
Well, let's do trail news, as we normally do at the beginning of a trail show.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we have trail news. Here it is.
Okay, some 80-year-old guy got busted for some weird animal husbandry stuff. Some guy in Montana pleaded guilty for 2 felony counts of wildlife crimes for an almost decade-long effort to create giant sheep hybrids to sell to hunting facilities.
What?
Arthur Jack Schubarth of Vaughn, Montana, was importing, let me go to the story. He was importing sheep species from across the world, and he then bred one of them with a regular sheep in the U.S. and made this jumbo sheep, and then he did some like in vitro stuff with an embryo, and then started creating this whole subspecies of sheep. So he imported parts of the Marco Polo Bengali sheep, which is from Kyrgyzstan.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah.
Not native to Montana.
No, not at all. Then he imported one, bred it, and then he had a single pure genetic male that he called the Montana Mountain King. And then he used that semen to artificially impregnate various species of female sheep.
And this guy's 80?
Yeah.
What?
So the problem is, like, he's absolutely creating like a new species, you know what I mean?
Of animal. Yeah.
And that's against the law.
But how is this different than, I mean, think about like the Labradoodle.
Yeah.
So someone said, let's take a poodle and a Labrador and mate them. And now we've got this new dog.
Right.
Isn't this guy sort of doing the same thing, but with a different species of animal?
I would say yes, and I don't know all the laws, but me just shooting from the hip, just flinging baloney around, I would say the difference is that dogs are already bred animals. They are not wild animals. Mm-hmm. And he's breeding animals that could potentially, like, they're going to go to hunting facilities. They could potentially get out, you know, and then breeding in the wild,
the native populations of sheep.
Have you not seen Jurassic Park?
Oh yeah, that's a good point, Triple O.
So anyway, so that guy's gonna be in some trouble.
Well, he's 80. What are they gonna throw him in jail?
Yeah, they talked in the article. Let's see. So maximum 5 years in prison. So he'll be 85. So when he gets out, so, you know, maybe he'll run for president after that. And
probably help his chances.
And a fine of up to $250,000 for each count. So he's hitting both parties for qualifications for running for president. Anyway, let's see what else. There's that. Let's see. Carson City is looking for 2 hikers. Carson City has just built some trails from their downtown to connect to the Tahoe Rim Trail, which then links up to the PCT and obviously goes all the way to Canada. So they're looking for two hikers that would start their hike from Carson City and hike up to Canada. So via their trail system, then to the Tahoe Rim Trail, then to the PCT. And the total length of that journey is around 1,600 miles. And they're going to pay each of these hikers $5,000. Yeah. And you have to do your hike in 2024. The application window, it says, closes May 31st, 2024. So quick turnaround there. You got to have 2 weeks to get your stuff together. I don't know. But $5,000.
I'll nominate D'Lo as one of the hikers.
Well, that's pretty cool.
D'Lo, are you interested?
I mean, that's great. Do you have to hike together with this other person? Or
no.
Is it two individuals?
No, just two individual hikers. Yeah.
No, I'm not interested.
You're not interested? Why not?
I mean, if I had the time, I would do it.
I mean, responsibilities.
$5,000 to hike all
summer? Come on, man. They're going to pay you $5,000. How are you going to say no to that?
I have responsibilities.
Man, this is starting to sound really interesting, honestly, now that I think about it.
I mean, if you have the summer off.
Yeah.
You know?
And you said 1,600 miles?
Maybe you could pick up some additional sponsors along the way, too.
No, like, sponsors require things. That's no good.
You could pick up, like, some bighorn sheep breeding sponsors. That would be interesting. Maybe they could send you some sheep jerky.
Okay, if you did it in 2 months,
genetically engineered sheep jerky.
26.6 miles per day. If you do it in 2 months, which is about what I have. Yeah, anyway, okay.
That seems reasonable. It's PCT miles.
Yeah.
Great for horses.
Fueled with genetically engineered sheep. Jerky.
Yep.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. High protein.
Yep.
Good stuff.
Super high protein.
You probably really get to skip a couple hundred in Oregon and Washington in fires season two.
Yeah. Ooh, good point. Yeah, and what if there's fires in California? You get shut down. Yeah. Ooh, this is starting to sound doable. I might have to change my.
You might just hang out in hotels and in the air conditioning, trying to stay out of the smoke. Sounds excellent to me.
Oh boy. Yeah. Just bring your smoke mask. You'll be fine.
Oh yeah, totally.
All right, we've got a bit of a problem in the National Park Service.
No.
The National Park Service was sued. Because they are trying to go cashless in several facilities all over California.
No, cupcake.
So, yeah, there's a law that says coins and currency are legal tender for all debts, public charges, taxes, and dues. So National Park Service is refusing to, they want to go cashless, basically. And there's some people that are suing because they're like, they're off the grid or whatever. They don't have a credit card. They don't have a bank card. And they're like, you have to take cash because that's
it's legal tender.
It's legal tender.
Especially at a federal facility. Federal facilities have to accept federal currency, even if it's pennies. Somebody could roll up in there with a duffel bag full of pennies and they got to take it.
Yep.
Oh, I'd count so slow if I was on that job that day.
I can't imagine the person with a duffel bag of pennies is in a big hurry.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Yeah. So they were telling people no cash. Like, this is what, Southwest Airlines does on a flight if you try to buy a drink. And they have the right to do that. It's a privately owned company. And that's how they do business. But if you're a national government agency, you can't
so
tell people no cash. Come on.
What it says is Justin Unger, the National Park Service Associate Director for Business Services, said that in recent years, U.S. Treasury created policies to reduce the amount of cash and checks handled across the federal government, and many banks stopped partnering with the Treasury in that process. And then because there were fewer formal banks, it means that a lot of these places that are remote have to travel really far to process the cash that they pull in. And it gave this stat that Death Valley spent nearly $40,000 a year on processing and transporting cash at the park. So I read that.
The cost of doing business, POD.
Yeah, and then I looked up some statistics about Death Valley, and it says found 1.1 million people visited Death Valley in 2023, despite it being closed for 2 months. So if entrance fees are $40 and you figure that 1.1 people is maybe average groups of three or something, mm-hmm. that's quite a bit of a revenue. Death Valley National Park's visitors spent $104 million in surrounding Nevada and California communities in 2021. So they're spending a lot of money on processing the cash. $40,000 is a lot. And it's like, A, compared to how much money they take in, it's probably not that much. And B, I guess if it's the law, it's the law. I mean, I don't know what to say, you know?
The law is the law.
That's right.
Well, there's a lot of decisions about this particular law. Like if your coins are too scratched, maybe not.
Ooh.
Maybe they can refuse. Can they refuse money based on? Who knows? Is that a law? Can you refuse money because it's too battered?
What if your
silver coin worn by natural abrasion only is legal tender for its original value so long as it is not appreciably diminished in weight and retains appearance of coin duly issued from the mint.
Mm.
What if your paper currency is soaked in bacon grease?
They have yet to rule on that decision.
Okay. D'Lo, you could probably...
What if you draw a picture of sunglasses on the president's face?
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
What happens then? Is it still legal tender or has it been defaced? Have you defaced public currency and now are you liable for that defecation?
Defecation?
Defamation? Not to be confused with defecation. I don't know.
I don't either.
These are all very complex questions.
I wish we had a lawyer on staff.
I know, right? If only. Okay, our last news story. Jasmine Paris, everyone. Wow. She's the first woman to win the Barclay. The Barclay race, and there's only like 15 people ever that have completed it or something like that.
It's like 24, but who's counting? Crazy. I mean, frankly, it is a win just to finish it. She did win.
Yeah, and she completed it with like 90 seconds before the cutoff of 60 hours. The cutoff is 60 hours, and she completed it with 90 seconds left. That's insane.
It's unreal.
I don't know if you guys knew about this or watched the videos of her finishing. Oh my God, it's insane.
She just
The Onion actually tried it a couple of times. I think he only got like one loop. There's like five or six loops you have to do.
Yeah.
And he only
did something crazy, like 120,000 feet of elevation.
Yeah. They say it's like climbing Everest twice.
Yeah.
That race.
Well, it's 5 20-mile loops. And each time you run a loop, you then have to run the same loop again in the opposite direction. So if you start out clockwise, then you got to go counterclockwise, then clockwise. So you just keep like doing the same loop in different directions. But sometimes you're on the loops at night. It's at a very remote and rugged state park.
And it's also most of it's off trail.
Yeah. A lot of briars and brambles on that route.
And I also read a thing that like it's the first one's clockwise, then counterclockwise, then clockwise. And then whoever finishes the third loop first decides which direction the fourth loop is going to be. Fourth and fifth loops are going to be run. So you actually don't know.
I didn't know that.
Finish your third loop, what the other person has decided.
There's
all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah.
That race.
Well, the other thing is like the starting time isn't set in stone. The starting time happens sometime between midnight and 8 a.m. Nobody knows when. And I think the signal is that the guy who made the race, like they sound a horn. As soon as the horn goes off, you have 1 hour. So the horn could go off at 3 a.m. It could go off at 6 a.m. It could go off.
And then
midnight.
It officially starts when he smokes a cigarette.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. Very weird.
And like 30 or so people are allowed to run it each year. Yep. Like it's very, you know, very select.
You have
select.
To write an essay to get in.
And I think this was her third year in a row trying it. And she got real close last year. And this year she...
This is also someone who set a course record on like 175 mile race in Europe. Set a course record men's and women's and breastfed during the race.
She's an extraordinary human athlete.
Like some might say she's a little extra.
She's extra for sure.
But in a good way.
There's a great documentary about the Barkley Marathons on Netflix if anyone's interested.
That's it. That's all I have for trail news. Real trail item. Are you guys proud of me? I had real news and I actually read the articles before the show.
Good job.
Very proud of you.
Nice work.
Turning over a new leaf, but don't expect the same next month.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and resume.
Okay.
All right.
This is not a chance, and I never listen to the trail show.
Trail show is back. We're going to the hotline. Triple O.
Well, listeners, I'm very proud of you this month. We have multiple calls from multiple people, which means we have more.
What up, trail show? This is Marvin, my Maverick Castle, El Hikador of Tucson, Arizona. Just finished up another route. Or a section here in the desert in the southwest. Currently at my motel chilling. Guess what? I finished a day early, so I'm forced to take a zero. Like your last person that talked about the Discovery Trail mentioned taking a zero and chilling. So yeah, I'm off. Taking some transport up to Sky Harbor Airport and back up to Utah tomorrow evening. But, yeah, man, going to try to break some records here and do this all in one call. But, yeah, I was talking to, like, Dirtmonger, Snorkel, The Onion, and a few others, and they think that there should be another segment, like a five-minute segment called All Things Gothel. Talk about Gothos. So, yeah, I could be maybe a 20th chair, you know. Think about it, Trail Show. Anyways, I'm out of here. Love you guys. I'll cut up with all the episodes and appreciate you guys very much. I usually listen to you guys the day I'm coming into a town. So have a good one, and I'll chat with you guys later. Viva los Gothos, Vatos! Adios!
All Things Gothos. Apparently Snorkel actually recommended it too, I think is what he said. And Dirtmonger.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it could be a powerful segment.
Could be.
Very interesting insights.
Could be super informative.
Into a fractured mind.
All Things Gothos. coming soon to a trail show near you.
Yeah, buddy. Viva los Gatos!
In case anyone's got a drink ready, here's a call from one helpful caller.
The Florida Trail. Now drink.
Wow, that laugh sounded
like the president of Aldo West.
Evil laugh. Yeah.
No, that was the president. Oh yeah, president, maybe.
I don't know.
Please hold on for the president of all the West.
That was
we also have musical talents on display.
Of all the money that ever I've had, I have spent it in good company, and all the harm that ever I've done. Alas, it was to none but me. And all I've done for want of wit, to memory now I can't recall. So fill to me the parting glass. Good night and joy be to you all. Of all the comrades that ever I had, they're sorry for my going away. And all the sweethearts that ever I've had, they'd wish me one more day to stay. But since it fell upon my lot that I should rise and you should not, I'll gently rise and I'll softly call. Good night and joy be to you all. Slán agus banasht.
Was that an Irish ditty for St. Patrick's Day?
Ah, I think it was.
It was pretty nice. D'Lo, giving you a run for your money, man.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Quite like that. Yeah. Beautiful.
Really. Way beautiful. Better than the college students turning the fountain green near us and partying through the night. And then finally, we get an update from the Slack Shack.
Hey, Trail Show. It's Boo and Slackjaw coming to you from the Slack Shack in northwestern Pennsylvania. We have a trail tip. So up here in Pennsylvania, we see freaking Mylar balloons in the woods all the time. And we send pictures to the mule and we tell him that he lost his happy birthday balloon. Mm-hmm. But we found one last weekend and immediately we thought of the best idea how to reuse it. So we have a trail tip and an Ask a Hiker. If you found a Mylar bar balloon in the woods, what would you do with it? And this is our trail tip.
Foot box for your sleeping bag. Works great.
Exactly.
A little dirty. But everything is.
Yep. Okay.
That's true.
That's all. Talk to you later. Bye.
I worked a contract.
Later. Don't listen to the trail show.
I worked a contract out in the West Elk Wilderness a couple summers ago, and over the course of 2 months, I found 8 Mylar balloons in the woods, deflated and sad. That was just one spot in the middle of nowhere. Like, can you even imagine the hundreds of thousands of Mylar balloons in woodlands all over the world? It's not just here. It's crazy. It's crazy.
I would just like to ask the question. If there is no one there to see a Mylar balloon in the woods, is it really there?
It is there, and it freaks out like the animals, the deer and stuff. I'm sure they're like, oh, God, what is that?
It's unless like it's shiny. Their birthday, then they might be like, oh, thanks.
Then they're happy to see it there.
I like the idea. It is a boy. Or it is a girl.
I like the idea of using it in your sleeping bag, though, if you're cold.
Yeah, like after people run marathons, they wrap them in like Mylar capes and stuff.
Maybe they could start sewing those capes out of recycled, forest balloons.
Forest balloons. The Barkley marathon. Like, you can only get it if you pick up Mylar balloons in the in the woods on one of your
like hunting. You're like hunting for Mylar balloons. Yourself. You're like, what if I don't find a Mylar balloon? Then you don't finish the race.
You don't get a blanket. You just have to shiver. Oh, man. Those are some good calls. It was lots of variety.
Yeah, that good medley.
Yeah.
Let's do a quick media review, POD.
Okay.
Company. We haven't done a media review in a long time. And I had the distinct pleasure, and she did not know I bought her book, but we've had Amanda Timioni on the show before. Not a chance, as she goes by in Trail World. She came on many moons ago to talk to us about her hike of the Northern New Mexico Loop. And I believe she's the one who coined the phrase meadow bagging, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that is correct.
She's the first person, at least, that I heard use the term. Anyway, She's got an incredible Instagram account. And
yeah, she does.
If you're on that platform and you're not following it, you are missing out. Anyway, she just released her first book of sorts. And it's more like a zine, but you can get it on Amazon. It's called As the Trail Turns, Short Stories, Volume 1. And the subtitle is You Won't Know Until You Get There. And I ordered it and just went, I think I read through it in two sittings. It's a mixture of her photos, short stories, kind of like vignettes, some poetry, really cool stories that cover a whole bunch of different trails and even parts of her childhood here and there. But I really dig her writing. And if you dig her Instagram account, you will dig this book. So I'm going to post a link to it. POD, you read it. What'd you think?
I've read through about half of it. I thought it was great. I mean, it's such a neat collection of different types of things. And every single thing is, you know, a quick read. Not that that's a requirement for it to be a good book, but it's nice. The pictures are beautiful. Yeah, the pictures are beautiful. I mean, it's really fantastic. It's really well put together and it's simple. It's just, yeah, it's awesome.
And I haven't read her book, but I do am a big fan of her writing. She has a very like punchy, like vivid kind of way of describing things that like really makes you see it in a cool way. So I'm sure that the book is great.
The book is really good. We'll post a link to it. It's only 70 pages long, and I'm hoping that because this is volume one, that implies there's going to be more, because I will buy up whatever she puts out. It's really, really fun reading. The second quick mention for Media Review is an article that I convinced POD to read last night. It's in the current issue of Outside Magazine, which is the March-April issue. And POD, I don't know, you might have the magazine there, but anyway, there's a thing that happened in Colorado. The synopsis is this: a lady and her sister and her 13-year-old son all left Colorado Springs and relocated to the middle of nowhere, kind of out in Gunnison County, to live off-grid because the mom had gone down the rabbit hole of various internet conspiracy theories about, this was during COVID, this was like 2022, that, you know, all her freedoms are going to be taken away. Anyway, the three of them moved out to Gunnison County, try to live out in the woods, and their bodies were recovered, I think, the following spring.
Yep.
And Outside Magazine did about a 5 or 6 page story on what exactly happened. I don't even know what to say. It's
good. People should read it. That's all. There's nothing to say without giving it away.
Yeah. So, it's kind of jaw-dropping.
So if you don't get Outside Magazine, just head to your nearest REI, find it there, read it while you're in the store, and then roll out.
You just go to the long-distance hiking section of your local bookstore. And you might see
Dilo Outdoor there. Magazine. You know,
you can just hang out in the aisles.
That's right.
Reading stories about people dying in the woods. All right. Very good.
Let's move on to trips. Speaking of not dying in the woods.
Yep. Let's don't start with us. Dilo or Triple O? Who would like?
I'll go. Let me go first.
Yep.
I have, taken no trips that I can talk about on the show.
Oh boy. But you have taken trips.
Yeah, but I can't talk about them on the show. Can't talk about them. Yeah. Not acceptable.
Oh, can't it must do it. Involve forbidden modes of transportation.
Forbidden modes of transport.
Sorry. But not sorry.
Triple O? How about you?
I was in Puerto Rico for a while, and I stumbled upon the Paseo del Moro, which is a national recreation trail. Which I then proceeded to through hike. It's all of maybe a couple miles.
Nice.
But it's a really cool, it's cool. It's an old trail that goes along the walls of one of the two main fortresses that guarded San Juan.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's a cool trail because you get to kind of see how these fortresses were made in the old city, and I don't know, you think about interesting Spanish imperialism and all that jazz. Apparently this was part of the biggest fortress system in all of Spain's colonies in the Americas, and also on a different island, just off of the main island of Puerto Rico, there's another fort that is the last fort that Spain ever built in the Americas. So you can kind of see both the height of the Spanish power and the end of it in Vieques.
I'm stoked you guys went over there. Did you check out the bioluminescent bay?
We did. The bioluminescent bay is very cool. I will say it is kind of hyped up a lot, but it is pretty magical. It's great. One of those phenomena in the planet where it doesn't quite feel real because it's just so, it's just odd. You're not used to it. Kind of like fireflies or something like that, where you're like, wow, what is this? This is something different.
Right.
So, very fun.
Doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Exactly.
We didn't make it to Vieques. We went to Culebra for a few days, but Vieques was on our hit list and it just didn't happen. So next time.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah
it was fun. It's a good reminder to always kind of look at maps. Like when I was just randomly walking around and found this thing because I was looking at a map, I was like, what's there? And so I kind of like poked my head around until I found it. So it's always good when I think it's one of the best ways to travel and see cities and stuff. If you can like look at like even like a Strava heat map, you can see, oh, there's people that keep running in this one area. There must be a trail or something there. It's a good way to find pathways that you otherwise might not know about.
Did you all go check out El Yunque National Forest while you were there?
Yes, we did.
Was it busy?
It was not too busy.
Okay.
Yeah. It was fun. Some of the trails are still closed. I think, you know, a lot of the island is still recovering from the hurricane. So even though it's been years.
All right. Well, POD and I went to South Dakota.
Yeah, let's hear this.
Well,
this drama.
Well, first of all, let's just say the original plan was to try this loop hike we've been trying to do down in Arizona for a couple years in a row now. But again, the weather, so a big precipitation system rolled through the west and it dropped. Salida, we got 16 inches. Parts of it, I mean, Nederland got 52 inches. So right outside of Boulder.
Ooh.
Like this snowstorm was the colossal snowstorm of the winter, at least so far. Hopefully that's it.
The past couple of years, actually.
Yeah, past couple.
Past 3 years. Past three years.
And that same snowstorm dropped a foot of snow in the part of Arizona where we were going to go. So we were like, where can we go? It's POD spring break. Where can we go that's snow free? Ah, let's travel north. Let's drive 8 hours north to South Dakota because the Black Hills, oddly enough, were warm and snow free. So that's what we did. We got in the car. We drove to South Dakota. POD, what happened next?
So we had planned to hike 70 miles over like 3.5 days.
Of
the South Dakota Centennial Trail. So we started at the southern terminus and we hiked in one day, had a really good day. It was beautiful. It was warm enough.
Buffalo, bison everywhere.
We saw buffalo. We saw antelope. We saw a coyote.
Elk.
We saw elk, which are rare there, but we saw them.
Prairie dogs.
It was like very idyllic and beautiful. Had a nice camp. Next morning, we get up. We did 20 miles.
Boom.
Which is great. You know, nothing too very steep, but we were feeling pretty good. You know, it was like 3,500 feet of gain over the whole day.
Not too bad.
Yeah, it was great. And we had the sweet campsite. The first night campsite was kind of cold. It was a little too close to the water. The second night, we did a dry camp. And we're like, all right. We're primed. We're going to be able to do another 20 tomorrow. This is going to be awesome. So we go to bed. and I woke up at around 2:30. I was like, I feel nauseous, and I took some Tums or whatever. And Disco was like, yeah, my stomach feels terrible. So we try to go back to sleep. And then around 4, I woke up and just barely made it outside the vestibule crawling and started vomiting. And then Disco immediately had diarrhea. And then we took turns leaving the tent, casting out the demons from various ends of our bodies.
Yep.
Until about 9 a.m. You just got to get to the point where you're so dehydrated that everything stops, you know?
Yep.
And we, Disco has a friend, Paul Chisholm, who's going to pick us up at the end. And we had cell service, and Disco texted him. And fortunately, he was able to pick us up that day at a different place. So.
But and we still had to walk a mile.
Yeah. And granted, it was like
road.
30 degrees out or something. So every time we got out of the tent, it was cold, you know. It was pretty bad. I've never ever had food poisoning in like the backcountry before, and it was pretty awful. I was happy to be with someone else, because
just a quick question, Disco, yeah. This is not the first time that you have had food poisoning.
I've had food poisoning multiple times,
so
but never
really?
In the backcountry.
I feel like I don't really get food poisening too much.
Oh, you'd know it before. If you had it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, why don't I get food poisoning and other people do? Tell me why. Illuminate me.
You've gotten lucky. Part of it is you've gotten lucky.
What haven't I eaten, though? Like, what do you eat? Like, is it just random? It's just like,
well,
you eat somebody's feces and
yeah,
that's it?
Oftentimes,
like, what's the deal?
In a restaurant, it can be because of hygiene.
Yeah.
And it can be very minor. It can just be one person that handles one person's food. You can also get food poisoning from like meat that has not been stored properly.
And
you can also get food poisoning from improperly cleaned fresh vegetables, and also from leafy greens that have been left out.
Now
that have been left out.
Yes.
Yeah, so apparently
left
bacteria
out of refrigeration
multiplies insanely on leafy greens. Huh. So and leafy greens are a very like dirty produce item, just because of the way that they grow and everything. Mm-hmm. So all of the different runoff and fertilizers and stuff that we use to grow our food is on the leafy greens, and it's, you know, washed 3 times or whatever. But still there's bacteria, and for whatever reason, leafy greens, if they're not refrigerated, the bacteria, the tiny bit of bacteria that's on there, will go crazy.
So,
and that is what happened to us. I packed out fresh spinach, bags of fresh spinach.
Ziplocs of fresh spinach.
And I put it in my backpack on Sunday morning from the fridge to my backpack. And we ate it Monday night and Tuesday night. So it had been out several days.
We've got to actually ask a hiker question that could have potentially prevented you from this food poisoning episode, which we'll get to in a little bit.
Just so you all know this, because we didn't, apparently the CDC recommends leaving spinach out of refrigeration for no more than 2 hours.
Wow. I definitely did not know that.
Oh, and let me tell you, by the last meal, the meal that put us over the waterfall, it had been 56 hours of our spinach not being in refrigeration. Listen to this. I had no idea. If spinach has been left out at room temp for longer than 2 hours, it is generally recommended that it be discarded rather than washed and consumed. This is because harmful bacteria can begin to multiply rapidly at temperatures between 40 degrees and 140 degrees Fahrenheit. To minimize the risk of foodborne illness, it is best to wash spinach, blah, 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 after, and then to store it in a refrigerator in a sealed container or plastic bag until ready to use. So, you know, the daytime temps were around 60, and then you got you know, I don't know where on your pack it was sitting.
It was in the center part, kind of. Well, no, the bag that we ate from was at the top in my satellite bag.
It's probably
bag.
Even a little warmer than 60, and it's in a Ziploc bag sealed up, like, yep. Probably even a little warmer there.
And,
like,
and just to clarify, that is the only thing that Disco and I shared on the trail. Yeah. Disco and I have very different tastes in food, and we pack very different things. And so that is the only thing that we both ate. And it happened, you know, the timing, we ate dinner at like 5:30 or 6, and then, you know, less than 12 hours later.
Yep. So we had to walk a mile back to the road, which was the slowest mile I've ever hiked in my life.
There was like a 3-foot rise. And we got, I was feeling a little bit better than Disco in the morning because I hadn't had the runs like he had. But
I had them.
There was like a 3-foot rise. We got to that Disco went, oh no.
Yeah. And then when we got to the trailhead, we had to kill an hour and a half before my buddy could come get us. And it was chilly.
And we were sick. So we were like,
and we were sick.
Very
so
cold.
I was just laying on the edge of a parking lot. I just pulled my sleeping bag out. I just got my sleeping bag laying on the asphalt.
Asphalt, it was dirt.
And there's nobody there, right? There's
no,
we didn't see a single car.
It was at the bottom of a river lake drainage, so it was all
catabatic
cold air.
Just like frigid. So then Paul came and got us, drove us back to our car, which was at the southern terminus.
And he was going to set up this trail magic that day with the skeleton with the D-Lo face.
Yeah. D-Lo, I texted that. I don't know if you saw that.
I did see that. Yeah. Okay. I had nothing really to say about it. It was just like a picture of a skeleton with my face superimposed over it.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Sweet. Thanks, man.
So we drove from the trailhead, checked into a hotel. We actually had to wait a couple hours to check in. Like, and to say that, I can't speak for POD, but to say that I felt like complete and utter trash. I mean, anyone who's had food poisoning, imagine dealing with that and not being in your house with a bed, access to a bed and a toilet. Like,
yeah, you're trying to stay like 5 feet from a toilet at all times.
So anyway, we finally roll in there. POD got a thermometer. I had like 102.4 degree fever. I was dying. And luckily, POD was a lot more mobile.
I felt okay, actually.
I got in bed at 4 p.m. and I didn't get out of bed until like 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And POD was getting, it was a disaster. It was
anything that one can do to prepare their stomach to cope with the exponential bacteria growth on the spinach?
Here's what I'm going to say. I will never pack out fresh produce again because it is not worth the risk.
No.
Like, I like packing out fresh produce. I'm not just trying to be healthy. I like fresh produce, you know? And I was like, spinach isn't heavy. I can pack it out. Not a big deal. But I will never do that again. I will never pack out.
Not even like a red pepper?
Nope.
A carrot.
Not worth it.
Not worth it.
Like, you could eat it that night?
No, probably not going to do it.
Man, for me, it's going to be all processed food.
I'm just
going to
pass out. Or I'm going to pack out Pop-Tarts and Little Debbie's like everyone else.
They never get sick, those people.
They don't get sick.
Gummy bears.
Yeah.
Snicker bars. They never get sick.
Peanut butter, pepperoni, and cheese.
Yeah. Straight diabetic, never going to get it sick.
So here's the question I was asking myself. We were 1 mile from a road. Yes. What if we'd been 5 miles? What if it had been 10? What's the number of miles where we wouldn't have been able to walk out?
I mean, I don't know. I think you have to suss that out in the situation. I think you try to hike out. And if it's you really can't, then that's why you have the spot device, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, if we had been 10 miles instead of one, would we have pressed the spot button?
But couldn't you just have spent another day pooping and puking?
Possibly.
Drinking
you know
water?
That, like,
we wouldn't have
is,
a water source.
We would have had to move our camp. But
yeah.
The thing is, that's actually not a safe thing to do because we forget that people die of diarrhea all the time.
You need to stay hydrated. You need to drink water.
And but usually you can't drink water when you've been sick like that. Like, we tried to drink some water.
Mm-hmm.
It's you cannot. Your body is rejecting it.
Yeah.
And what you need, I mean, you need to drink water. You need electrolytes. I boiled some water, made some hot electrolyte drink in the parking lot, and we couldn't even drink that.
Yeah.
And what you need is liquids. And the fastest way to do that when you're sick is to be drinking like Sprite, Coke, something with tons of sugar in it, because your body oftentimes will accept that kind of liquid. And then once it's gotten some liquid in it, then you can get to the point where you can actually drink water. When you are sick like that, when you're nauseous, it's so hard to drink plain water. Yeah. And so you run the risk in the backcountry of getting to the point where you're in a really bad situation. And I'll just give you an example. Several years ago, I went to Mexico. My last day in Mexico, I ate street food. And the next day, I had flown directly to my parents' house. I got diarrhea, and I was like, ha, 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 that's funny, some traveler's diarrhea. And then it kept going throughout the day, and it kept going and kept going. And then at some point, I, like, almost passed out, like, sitting on the toilet. I almost, like, fell on the floor. And I, like, lowered myself to the floor. And my parents ended up taking me to the emergency room, which I tried to refuse, insisted I just needed a Sprite. And when I got to the emergency room, they gave me 5 bags of IV. 5.
That's a liter each, right?
Yeah. And my blood pressure or whatever had dropped so low because I was so dehydrated. They admitted me immediately and started giving me IV in both arms. So that is just me at my parents' house. Like,
yeah.
And if you experience an episode like that, that's that extreme in the backcountry, and you try to wait it out, you run the risk of, like, dying, honestly. Yeah. If you get too dehydrated, you could, you know, it messes with your blood flow. So
it was a disaster.
Yeah, it was bad.
It's terrible.
Fortunately, I felt better.
Spring break.
Kind of as soon as forever. We hiked out.
Spring break. Spring break forever.
And the next day, I drove most of the way home. But then I felt bad for days after that. So today's the first day I felt normal. So that was our trip. Could have been worse.
Spring break, man.
Could have been worse. Could have been raining. Could have been snowing. Could have been 10 miles away from the trailhead.
Could have been worse. It was pretty bad.
We could
not
have
the preferred reason for throwing up on spring break.
We could not have been together. We could have been alone.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway. Type 2 fun, people. It's going to be funny. It's already funny to me. But
hey, before we go to break, our last break, I want to give a quick update on effing lettuce. So last month we had a plea. We sent out a plea to effing lettuce to come on the trail show and talk to us about walking through swamps with backpacks. And POD, you were in touch with her?
Yeah, she said she just hasn't done that part of the Cypress, the big Cypress or whatever. She was supposed to do it, but had some family stuff come up. So she said she maybe in the future after she's had a little more experience.
Okay.
So there's that. Also, big shout out to Paul Chisholm, who rescued us.
Yeah.
So.
All right. When we come back from break, we've got mailbag. We've got some donors. We've got Ask a Hiker. D-Lo, don't go anywhere.
This is M. John Fahey, and I never, ever listen to The Trail Show.
The Trail Show is back. We had some mailbag items this month. Couple, actually. The first item reads as follows. Dear Trail Show, I heard a rumor that if you listen to show 80B backwards while ingesting a mixture of LSD, bath salts, and maltodextrin while hiking the Florida Trail in July, you will understand the true meaning of life. Can you confirm or deny? Respectfully, Danth Ompson. Well, damn. I've done most of the things that he suggested in his letter, but never at the same time. So I can't
have you?
Confirm
I don't
or
think
deny.
You've done any of those things.
Sure, I've hiked. Actually, you're right. I haven't done.
Bath yeah. salts, maltodextrin, Florida Trail, mixture of LSD. Show ADD backwards?
No. How about any of you all? Do you know about what he said?
What are bath salts?
I think they're like these nice aromatherapy things you put in your bath when you want to
have like Epsom salt.
Or an illicit drug.
Illicit drugs.
Bath salts, yes. That's an illicit drug, yep. And I don't know what they are.
They make people like try to eat the faces of other people.
What? Yeah. I mean, yeah, all these things are illicit drugs. LSD, hiking the Florida Trail.
That's an illicit drug? Hiking the Florida Trail?
It should be.
All right. Mailbag item number 2 says, hey, Disco, something really cool just happened. I've been working with Wharton State Forest in New Jersey on developing new trails. And while I was driving there today, I passed the Batona Trail right about the same time you guys mentioned it on the show. I've never really considered it for a backpacking trip, but the work I have been doing has given me a greater appreciation for what's in my own backyard. I've done a lot of day hiking here, but have always traveled farther for overnighters. Maybe I've been too harsh and should give it a go. Also, the interview with Brianna was awesome. Thanks again for what you do. Scouts honor. So the Batona Trail was kind of a throwaway comment from Effing Lettuce, of all people. She just said randomly, as she was, I think it was on the hotline, she just said, hey, you guys should cover the Batona Trail.
Oh, yes.
It's the first trail I ever hiked. So yeah. Scouts Honor heard that and apparently lives right near it.
I mean, why not? You know, that's like the Onion, you know? He just went and hiked all the trails in his backyard. There's something to be said for that.
Petey, you want to read the third item?
Sure. Dear Trail Show Podmasters, in the odd event that anyone cares, and if this passes the scrutiny of blatant commercial promotion, I am announcing the pending release of my next Grammy-worthy album entitled Sundown. Yes, Sundown is destined to be the epic album of our age. Unlike my previous album, Yet Like Beer, it has little to do with hiking. Yet, the dulcet tones are certain to inspire hiker trash to not stop until they get up that hill. Of course, when I'm on stage with Lady Gaga and Ed Sheeran, it will be a great opportunity for the Trail Show to get the Axel Grammy bump. I think a nomination for the category of Best Hiking Podcast featuring trails, reciting beer can labels, and other nonsense would exalt the Trail Show to exalted status, resulting in engorged wealth for Disco and company. When Sundown is released, it will be found in many online sources, such as Apple Music, Pandora, iHeart, Spotify, and the soon-to-be-outlawed TikTok. Type Axel, A-X-Y-L, Sundown, into a browser, and it will likely appear ready for download. I wish all a happy St. Patrick's Day. Slán agus beannacht. Patrick Axel Dixon.
Stop till we get a
bad
hill. Boom.
Back on the trail.
Exalt the Trail Show to exalted status.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right.
That's it for mailbag.
Healthy mailbag.
Yeah.
Beauty, do we have any donors this month?
Oh, yes.
We had
lots
some
and lots of donators. We've got. Are you ready?
Go.
We're ready.
Bernard Wolf.
Bernard Wolf. Russ Not Fuss Kinder.
Go fucking.
Go Gully, Bobby Walters, Trevor Smoking, if you got it, the Bowl Man,
plug it up.
Bobby Walters,
Jeffrey Cottonmouth, Caldwell, Diane
Caldwell
Pickers,
Cottonmouth.
David Sarcasm, the Elf Biddy, Justin Knowles, Ingrid Gerard,
Western New York,
Vermont,
the Bouncer Dixon,
Axel,
The Weekend, Ammon the Brute, Bruce, Renee, Sheera Patrick, Wesley, the Haggis Addict, Greenwood.
I want to have my haggis.
Kevin, Chickpea Cross, and Sasha Honeydew, Codette. T-Bone, not Tim Garbanzo. Williams. Tommy, the meat popsicle. Stevens. Brandon, Lost Balls, Love Lady. Phil, Felipe. Gilbert. The Ancient. Crested. Deep in the Earth's crust. Geode Hail. Tony, Sheboygan Brewing. Pitts, Rachel, Die, Bama, Die, Merchant.
Merchant.
Dance, Thompson.
Dan Thompson.
Richie, Rich. Lemuel, Glasgow.
Coffee Man.
Coffee Man. Anybody want to say anything about the coffee?
So good. Thank you.
Many thanks, Lemuel.
And no thank you, because when we run out, my wife is going to be upset with me at any other coffee I get.
I am the same. When the Lemuel coffee runs out and I have to switch back to the other, I'm always like, ugh, God, it's so not as good. Anyway. Okay. Mark, Willie G. Homer,
Willie
Daniel,
G.
Fun Dip Sharp, Hill,
dip,
Bill Cottrell, Woody, Yukon Caboose Bass, Matt, Phantom of the Opera.
Wait, or is that Fat Ransom?
What?
I don't know. Is it Fat?
How
Ransom?
Dare you?
Sorry.
How dare
sorry,
you?
Matt, ah. Sorry, Matt Frampton.
God. Tim, the Hooch Hoochins. Paul, True Love. Tyler, the Kermoader. Kermit the Frog. Andrew Paget. Pat Pipkin. Bob. Bobo Evans down on the farm.
Evans.
Victor. Flamingo.
Flamingo.
Simon, the German vampire, Rosenfeld. Marvin, Maverick, Kessler, from Tucson, Arizona. Viva los gatos,
El Haikador.
All things gato. Jack, hi, Billings.
What's the name of Maverick's new trail show segment?
All things gato.
I think he's gato.
Hey, all things gato, vato.
This is Marvin Kessler. Viva los gatos, vato. And I'm here to talk about all things gatos for 5 minutes on tonight's trail show.
Jack, Thigh High Billions. Jim, the Heathen Hebener.
Hebener.
Chisholm.
Hey now.
Thank you for saving us.
Yeah.
She-Ra the Switchblady, a.k.a. Sweet Fern and Brian the Big McNamara, a.k.a. O.B.
O.B. Alabama. Okay.
That's everybody, I think.
Very good.
Is this the part of the show where we end the show?
No, this is the part of the show where Mike DiLorenzo has a Ask a Hiker question.
It looks like my Ask a Hiker questions got removed from the show sheet, so maybe we'll
have
the show.
I see them.
Oh, wait, never mind. Sorry. I just didn't scroll down. Okay. Tonight's Ask a Hiker with D-Lo. That's me. Question number one. And I hope I haven't read this before. Hey, D-Lo, ever hear of Gore-Tex socks? I wear them with my Ultras in the snow, and they work great. After hearing a few shows ago, well, I thought I'd throw out there in case you find it helpful. Hope all is good. Scout's honor.
I've never tried that.
But I've heard of people using them like in the Sierra and stuff too.
I don't know. It seems like it could be useful.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as long as they keep your feet, your actual feet dry.
Yeah.
I think it's also about warmth, you know? But yeah.
I've actually decided to opt for a
membrane, like a wetsuit almost. Yeah. If you even get water in there, at least it's not
circulating.
I've
opted for like insulated waterproof like boots for schlepping through snow myself. Yeah. Not that I've done much hiking in snow recently, but when I walk through snow, those are what I opt for. Yeah, I don't know about the Gore-Tex socks and like.
Well, I think when you're doing some hiking, that like you don't want to wear boots, you know, like mixed conditions where you're going to be going in and off, you know, in and out of snow.
Yeah.
It's kind of a. Like, or if you're going to be doing.
Snow in particular.
Or if you're going to be doing some creek crossings that aren't necessarily terribly high, but are going to be super cold.
That's the key. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like if the trail is going to be all snow, you might as well just wear boots. But if it's going to be like mixed conditions, it's going to be dry. And then patches of snow. Yeah, could be worth a shot.
And I think that also helps because These are, I have heard that durability is not like their, like durability of the waterproofness is not
okay.
the strongest yeah. of points. So if you're thinking yeah. you're going to wear them for like 500 miles, think again. No. But if it's like, oh, I got to get through a day or two, then maybe. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Or even a, you know, a little, a week or something, right? I mean,
yeah,
I would feel like a pair of Gore-Tex socks that you spent $50, $60 on is going to last for
you would hope
a day or two,
right?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've never worn Gore-Tex socks. So if any listeners are advocates of Gore-Tex socks, you should write into the Trail Show next month and let us know your feelings about them. And we'll feature your letters in the mailbag or the Ask Your Hiker segments, because Gore-Tex socks are something that is new to all of us.
See.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. I think we have another Ask a Hiker question. Question Ooh. Number two. Yeah. Dear Trail Show, what is the best way to pack in ice on the trail? I really like cold drinks and like to keep my spring water iced on the trail. How can I keep my ice frozen for 3 to 4 days at a time? I'm not averse to carrying a little extra weight to make this happen. A cooler, perhaps, or some sort of solar-powered refrigeration unit. But I'm curious if you all have any advice on this issue.
I would suggest
Cheers,
hiking with the...
Love the show. Chug ice water is this hiker's name.
Chug ice water.
Chug.
Or is it chug water?
Yeah, chug ice water.
Okay.
I no, would suggest... I would suggest hiking with the Onion, because he regularly steals ice from people. So
yeah, we missed having an expert at this.
Reach over, you know, he's always packing because he's just recently taken someone's ice. So
no, what if you hiked with a, you know, smaller sized, hard shelled cooler that had a handle, like in one arm?
Or what if you just stayed home and read magazines about hiking while drinking your drinks from the fridge?
Here's a real answer.
Let's not suggest that.
One, you can hike where there's still some snow.
Yeah.
And just use snow from snow fridges if you're willing to risk that.
Maybe. Yeah. What if you, I mean, what sort of solar powered refrigeration units could you affix to your pack?
None.
That sounds horrific.
Is it going to happen?
That sounds as bad as food poisoning in the backcountry.
But I mean, if weight's not an issue.
But weight
is
an issue.
Not an issue. When you're talking about packing in a
like
cool,
this dude,
a little extra weight.
Chug ice water. Chug ice water wants like to have iced spring water. Because
I will say an insulated
water
bottle will keep you in ice for quite a while.
That's true. Like those heavy.
They're heavy.
It's called those, you know, those
maybe
metal...
they're
maybe
double walled
ones. Be hiking. Maybe you need to be hiking very cold climbs with your Gore-Tex socks, and then an insulated water bottle, and harvesting natural ice to drink extra cold water.
Harvesting
to keep your body warm. You know, keep
That's
your
such
body warm.
A bolder way of saying it.
I'm harvesting this snow that I'm walking
on. Well, not snow. We're talking about ice. So first of all, you probably need some sort of a pick or an axe of some sorts.
Perhaps
a San Angelo bar?
Yeah. A small portable San Angelo bar, you know, just to kind of get some ice off of the icicles that are forming along the trail that you're hiking. Definitely going to want the Gore-Tex socks, because... if you're
maybe you could put
trail,
your beverage in
that
a sock
has icicles.
With the ice.
Well, actually, I think you could put your Gore-Tex socks, you could line them in the Mylar balloons that you find on the trail.
Man, a lot of callbacks.
Allow you to keep your feet a little bit drier and maybe preserve the lifespan of your Gore-Tex socks. So we're talking about Gore-Tex socks, Mylar balloons around the Gore-Tex socks, a portable San Angelo bar to harvest ice from the trail, a insulated water bottle to keep said ice frozen, even though it's probably far below freezing and you don't really need to worry about that, in which case you probably shouldn't be carrying ice on the trail anyways. But all of this is going to allow you to have that ice cold spring water when you want it on demand without carrying a portable refrigeration unit of some sorts.
Sounds like you've got it all figured out, D'Lo.
Yeah, well, it's awesome. I just, good thing you do so actually, much hiking.
I actually just figured it all out. Yeah, I just figured it all out. I mean, not that I would ever embark on any sort of a hike like this, because I would be way too scared to get food poisoning.
I think
because
that
if you get food poisoning in a situation like that, you're never going to make it out. You're just not going to make it out.
Certainly not going to pack your cooler out. Yeah. You're not going to have the strength.
And frozen ice water is not going to rehydrate you. You need warm Sprite.
Oh, man.
All right.
There's nothing to add. D'Lo, I think you saw it. You figured it out.
That's a winner.
I know. Yeah. I think the key is to hike where it's cold.
Yeah.
And there's natural ice.
Well, if you're hiking where it's cold, then you might not even need ice because it's cold.
Or if you're hiking over a pass, right? You go up the pass, you get your ice in your bottle.
Yeah,
at the top, insulated bottle. And then you're coming down later on a couple of thousand feet. It might be.
And you wrap your insulated bottle in your Gore-Tex socks as you get out of the frigid zone. Yeah, insulated even more. You might be able to make it back up to the next pass the next day. Without
sounds like a perfect setup for the John Muir Trail pass.
Yeah, without any sort of like solar powered like ice generating confabulator, you know.
Fabulous.
Maybe you could pack in that cooler and like a suitcase of beers and a grill, go up to Muir Pass, be up there grilling and selling beers and burgers, and just make a killing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they even have that little store hut.
What if you traded burgers for ice?
Yeah.
What if there was like rumor going down the trail, like, hey, you bring some ice up to the top. Homeboy at this pass has got you covered with a burger and a beer. You just need to bring in some ice.
You just need to bring a block of ice from the frozen river that's 200 yards that way.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I hope this has been a very informative discussion for our listeners and provided some useful knowledge that people can, you know, use on the trail to bring ice to cold regions during the wintertime to drink cold drinks.
I think this is the part of the show, D'Lo, where the show ends.
Yeah.
Oh, I think the show ended a while ago.
Yep. We want to thank everyone for tuning in today. Big thanks goes to The Onion for guesting on tonight's show. You can read all about his daily exploits at theonion.com. Many thanks to all our hotline callers. You too can be an audio nano star by calling the hotline at 720-893-2269.
69!
Last but definitely not least goes to all our monthly donors. We're on Venmo, we're on PayPal. Trail Show stickers are definitely in stock. Get yourself a variety pack while they last. $15 more donation at trailshow.com, of course. And frequently, we are on social media at Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You know where to go. Soon we'll be on Farcaster. What is it? What is Farcaster?
Farcaster.
We're on Amazon Music.
Did you say Fartcaster? Because
that's where we were last Tuesday night in the Black Hills. That was,
Well, that was Sharkcaster.
That wasn't,
Shark. Oh, boy. Thanks for hiking with us today. We know you have many podcasts to choose from, and we appreciate you hiking with The Trail Show. Come back and see us again in April for our April Fool's Day Hoolapalooza?
Extravaganza?
It's guaranteed to be full of beers, trails, and nonsense. Until then, I'd like to leave you with some words from Jeffrey Leon Bridges. Let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude. So that's what you call me. You know, that or his dudeness or duder or El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing. For POD, D-Lo, Triple O, The Onion, I'm Disco. Ciao.
Ciao.
You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm not Mr. Lebowski. No? Any Lebowski fans?
I'm sad that Arizona is out of the women's basketball tournament, or I could talk some trash.
They lost?
Maverick.
Poor Marvin.
Vive los gatos. Vato.
I don't know if statistically it actually happens more, but it kind of seems like people come here and die a lot.
So yeah. Micah roll up in there with a duffel bag full of pennies, and they got to take it.
Yeah, buddy! Viva Los
Gatos!
How's it going?
I'm currently in a hotel room in Parker, Colorado.
What's in Parker, Colorado?
A hotel room. One thing I didn't share while we were on air, which I'm going to share now. So the next morning at the hotel room, we were all packed up, set to leave, and I was sending an email. I was typing an email on my phone. And
we were really ready to leave. Everything was out of the hotel room.
Yep. And actually, you just turned the car on to like yes. warm it. And I had a fart. And
it wasn't a fart.
It was a lie.
Yeah. Then you had to go wash your underwear.
Oh, I had to take a shower.
You had to take a shower.
Throw your underwear in the trash.
Oh, you threw them away, just like a little child. Okay, yeah.
Gross. We had an 8-hour drive.
D-Lo, I don't know if you have more underwear. I guess it's fine. But
he did.
D-Lo, it felt like somebody put the chute of a cement mixer down the back of my pants. Oh. Opened the release valve.